ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is the Bowtie Chronicles podcast with your host, the 2022 Georgia Sports Writer of the Year, D. Orlando Ledbetter.
Wow, that was awesome, guys. Thanks for the surprise, and appreciate you all acknowledging the award from the National Sports Media Association. Thanks so much. We're going to get right into the Bowtie Chronicles podcast today, the 383rd episode of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. This is D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We're going to title this episode, A Look Back on the 2022 Season. Falcons went 7-10, and we'll head into the offseason with a lot of money to spend in free agency as they continue to rebuild the team. They want to call it a transition. When you get rid of all the players, that's called rebuilding, and they only kept two. So it's been in stages, and now we're getting ready to hit another stage of the Falcons rebuild. Before we move on to that, we're going to spend this episode looking back on the season. We talked to several players on the last day of the locker room, and we had breaking news yesterday, too, as Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator, elected to retire after the season at the age of 73. So we're going to get right to Dean Pease. We got a lot today. We're going to hear from Dean Pease, Arnold Ebiketie, Casey Hayward, review the scores from 2022, look at some stats, and then go over the draft order. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and hear from Eric Harris, Lorenzo Carter, Youngway Koo, Jake Matthews. Then we're going to go over the free agency list, the offseason calendar, and we're going to get you ready for the playoffs this weekend. They're calling it Super Wild Card Weekend. So, and the Falcons will, be trying to make it back to the playoffs next year and end this five-year playoff drought. So let's get going here with Dean Pease on his decision to retire.
Talked it over with my wife. We had a lot of long discussions, kind of made a list. Reasons to keep going, reasons to not keep going, and just kind of really hashed it out and really talked about it for a while, and just came to the decision. I thought it was the right time.
Well, there you have it. Very methodical response. He made the list and decided to, after talking with his wife, to retire. So he met with the team first, and this I thought was important. He wanted to see everybody face-to-face. That's real old school. He didn't want to shoot a text or do it on a Zoom. He wanted to look people in the eye and tell them he was retiring. He met with the team first and then with the defense. Here's what he told the team.
I shared with the team the reasons why I'm not coming back and that I am going to retire. But first of all, I told them the hardest decision was not seeing them and being around the team. I love this defense. Where they've come from the beginning of this year to where they are now, I've never had a defense do that. In this last nine games, we've given up an average of 314 yards a game and 19.7 points a game, which would be fifth in the NFL right now. Unfortunately, it's not the way it is because we played the first eight games. And we weren't that way. But to know that a team can improve that much and has improved that much and was bought in that much is just really tremendous. I just can't say enough good things about him.
All right, we know he had the incident down in New Orleans where he got ran into by one of the players and they had to take him to the hospital. So we wanted to know when he thought he might retire.
Not till the end. Not till the very end. It wasn't like, it's just at some point in time you just got to kind of sit down and say, okay, I told you I really usually reassess everything at the end of the season. And that's what I did. It was the end of the season. I told you last week when you guys asked me. I didn't lie to you. I told you I assessed it after the season. But the other part of that was that I think I also know how this coaching carousel goes. And I don't know how many jobs we got open today. Like 5 head coaching jobs, a couple coordinator jobs, all this kind of stuff. I also don't think it's fair to Coach Smith that I would hang on and say, okay, well, I'm going to take some time and think about this after the season. That's not fair. Make a decision so that he can make a decision. And that's the way it should work. You know, if you're a head coach and you're going to let somebody go, you got to let them go right after the season so they can go out and find another job. Well, it's the same thing if you're an assistant coach. You got to tell the head coach if you're not coming back right away. So I felt like after the game, I wanted to have an opportunity to address the players. And if all of a sudden everybody's out of the building after today, I'd have to do it through text or email. I want to actually tell them physically. I don't like texting. I don't like telling people over the phone. I want to tell you in person what I think and how I feel. And to me, that's the most genuine way to do it. And I've been that way with thousands of players that I've coached. You know, I want to tell them in person. I don't want to tell them by text or email or something else. So Mel and I just kind of decided over the weekend, right before the game, that let's make a decision. We did.
And we know, you know, the starting the season off, Dean Pease back in August was, you know, got into one of his rants and fits and went off on how he wanted to change the culture here in Atlanta about the defense and how they'd only been ranked in the top 10 one time over the last 20 years. And sure enough, I looked it up. There was the 2017 team was the lone top 10 defense. So defense hadn't been a thing. That might have, partly why the Falcons don't have a Super Bowl title. They haven't been able to build out the defense during the Matt Ryan era to, shut people down. And, you know, that haunted Dan Quinn too. You know, when he got to the Super Bowl, you know, when it was time to shut people down in the playoffs, Coach Smith's teams weren't able to do it. Almost did it against Kaepernick and the 49ers. Ended up on the 6-yard line. And then, that was pretty much the end of their push. Then, same thing with Dan Quinn. They ended up on the 1-yard line in Philly. If they can't score and you can't stop people, that's not a winning formula. So Coach Pease wanted to change the culture here and build out this defense. And we wanted to know if he thought the culture has changed since he got here.
I think incredible. I attribute that to the coaches, you know, Coach Smith starting at the top, but especially the defensive coaches too. Everybody bought in. But the players also bought in. And because you got to get them, you know, it was a different system than what they had. And so you got to get them to buy in. And that first year, they all bought in. I just don't think we couldn't do a lot of the stuff that we really wanted to do because you got to learn it. It's not an easy system. It's just not. It takes a while to learn it. And so, but then this last year at the beginning of the season, we just did some crazy things. They were much more in tune. I told you that during training camp. I told you that someday I want this defense to be talked about like the other defenses that I've been around. And now I think they are that. I mean, I really believe one of the things I wanted to achieve, personal goal, was that every place I've been, I've had a top 10 defense. And I wanted to have a top 10 defense now here. And now I think there is a top 10 defense. They were the second half of the year. This was a top 10 defense. And so I feel good about that. And I just, the progress that they've made, I mean, every week I go back into that room, even if we lost a tough one, because we lost a bunch of tough ones here down the stretch, all by 3 points, 4 points, whatever. And that takes a toll on you. You just get tired of watching that score up there, and there's the 3-point difference, and you had a chance to maybe win the game on one player or the other. And that takes a toll. But these guys come back in there on Wednesday, and when I talk to them or have the signal callers meeting, here we go again, and bought right into what we wanted to do. And it just really paid off. And like I say, I couldn't be prouder of that group of men.
All right, now the Falcons, you know, they said they're going to do a wide search for this defensive coordinator position. It's going to be, there are Rooney rules for the coordinators now. So we just, you know, think that if you just hire the best candidate, you'll comply with those rules and so forth. So, the best possible coach, you know, not just your buddy, the best person for the job. Should be interviewed and should land the job. I'm sure Coach Art Smith's going to do that. You know, Frank Bush took over for Dean Pease when he was ailed in New Orleans. And then also a name to keep an eye on is Jerry Gray. You know, we'll hear some more names here in the coming weeks. We'll talk to Coach and General Manager Terry Fontenot on Wednesday. And we're going to have a special edition of the Bowtie Chronicles later this week coming out of that meeting with the GM and the coach on the future of the team. But let's move on to Arnold Ebiketie, one of the rookies, on what he learned from Dean Pease.
It was very important for my growth as a player, you know, just soaking up all the knowledge I possibly could. Leaving college, a lot of things that we didn't do in terms of being in coverage or understanding the game over as a whole. I think just getting that knowledge and that experience just going to help me moving forward as a player.
All right, Ebiketie flashed at times last year, then he broke his wrist, and then we didn't see him out there. But he wants to be a three-down player, and we talked to him about the defense building a foundation. It is a young defense.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the culture that we build. If you look at most of the games this year, it was very close. It's just a matter of following those footsteps going into next year, and next year, when we are in those close games, we're able to finish those games, actually win those games. So it comes down to the culture, and I think leading up to next year, we're going to be a much better team.
All right, Casey Hayward, he wants to come back next year. He played right corner, and they were doing pretty good. Darren Hall had to replace him. He didn't do too good. He ended up the season on the scout team. Cornell Armstrong ended the season as the starting corner over there. So, you know, it's kind of a deal if he's got another year left, and won't cost him too much. But Casey Hayward is, you know, former Pro Bowler and so forth. It certainly would help if they could get that corner situation taken care of. And you never have too many cornerbacks. We saw that in Cincinnati when they roll out them three receivers. But Casey Hayward, here's what he had to say on Dean Pease's retirement.
Congrats to Dean, man. He's been doing it for a long time, man. Played against Coach some good defenses, some of probably the best defenses ever. Coached some of the Hall of Famers, some of the best defensive players ever. And he's done an amazing job since he's been here, man. So I want to give him his flowers, you know, as he goes off into the sunset, man. I'm just, you know, happy for him, proud of him, and glad I got to play for, you know, a year under Pease.
And here is Casey on if he wants to play for the Falcons next season.
Yes, for sure, I do. But, you know, this is a business, so I know how that kind of goes. But, like, I'm from Georgia. I got a house here, so it probably definitely, I feel like we'll be a lot better, especially on defense and as a team. I know, I think that'll be the case. I feel like we'll be a lot better, and hopefully I can be a part of that. But if not, like I say, I know I want to play next year.
All right, let's go on to, I want to review the scores from the season here. The 7-10 campaign, you know, everything started in bad fashion with a 27-26 loss to New Orleans on September the 11th. You know, the Falcons had the lead and blew that one. They went out to play the defending Super Bowl champions, got behind, and then came in hot, closed it to a 31-27 loss. We didn't know the defending Super Bowl champs would not be making the playoffs at that time. Stayed out west, stayed in Seattle, and that seemed like a long time ago, but that was a fun trip. And the pulled off a shocker over a playoff team and beat the Seattle Seahawks 27-23. Late interception by Richie Grant out there. Same thing next week. Beat the Cleveland Browns 23-20. I wrote in the game, you know, just wrapping up the season. You know, it was a lot of bizarre things that happened. One was Cleveland week. Fortunately, Myles Garrett's okay, but he dodged a deer that week and wasn't able to play against the Falcons. So, you know, they got some. That was a deer kind of helped them out this year. They went down to Tampa Bay, and this was crazy too. It was just crazy games this year. The 21-15 loss to Tampa. That'll be remembered as the unnecessary roughness game where Grady sacked Tom Brady and the refs were offended and threw a flag. So That's the only thing I could come up with. But I saw Joshua Dobbs roll out and get, like, pummeled. No flag. So, but he did. Once you get out the pocket, it's all off. All games off there. But Grady leveled Brady. That was a good one. And that was that game. And then San Francisco. This was probably the highlight of the season for the Falcons. I don't think San Francisco has lost since. But they beat them 28-14 at home. It's a big win for the Falcons. Then Cincinnati, you know, they're riding high at this point. They're 3-3. Everybody's predicting 1-5. It was just, hey, if you can get through those first six games, you know, then you could start talking about, you know, the future. And so they got through them 3-3 as opposed to 1-6, which is what a lot of people thought. But then went up to Cincinnati and had to face reality. The defending AFC champs ran him up out of the stadium. Fine, it could have been much worse, but it was 35-17. Okay, and then they could have they come back home and play the Carolina Panthers. Should have lost the game. They on this miraculous heave from PJ Walker that got called by DJ Moore. DJ Moore pulls his helmet off and you know, pushes back the extra point. He misses it. Falcons go to overtime and win. So, you know, they blew the Saints game, but they got a gift game back from Carolina. So, you know, football gods even it out over the course of the season. Chargers game, that was a tough one, 2017. They got it won. Tyquan Graham's running up the field on a fumble. You know, Drake London had a fumble there too. So, you know, you got to take care of the ball. Just the funny way the ball bounced this year. Then the Carolina, they went up there, and, you know, that's where we kind of started seeing the end of the Marcus Mariota era or stopgap time. The stop, drop, and roll pass was outstanding. We looked around at each other, like, what was that? But, yeah, he served a purpose. You know, didn't want to be demoted, he was, and then he left the team, so... Not after this game. It would come later at the bye week break. So then the Bears come to town. They beat them 27-14. Go to Washington and lose. You know, that was a tipped up pass by Mariota. You know, he just didn't take care of the ball. And nine interceptions, and that was one of them. Also, you know, you were in the shotgun in the goal line situation, which, you know, we've talked about a lot ad nauseum. Steelers, 1916, Drake London had, you know, that's kind of where we saw the frustration on the sidelines on people, on the receivers not getting catchable balls off of Mariota. Would be his last game also as they headed into the bye week. And they come back and Desmond Ridder's the starter against the Saints in New Orleans. So they put him in some tough spots and lost that game 21-18. Baltimore played in the frigid cold. It was 20 degrees up there and lost that one 17-19. Came home and, you know, they're eliminated at Baltimore. And, you know, could have, you know, if you finished, what would it have been, 5-12, I'll see that where that is when we go over the draft order. But they won the last two games. That didn't mean anything and hurt their draft status, you know, but they didn't care about that. So they dropped from probably 4 to 8 is where they end up at. And, you know, they were at 8 last year, too, as they finished 7-10. So 20-19 over the Cardinals and then 30-17 over the Bucks, playing mostly their backups. But that's the wrap-up. The Falcons 7-10 in a bizarre season. It's a lot of quirkiness going on. You know, there's going to be a lot of 13-1 game scores. They're 5-8. They won six games at home. When you get better players, you can get out of that one game rut. You're going to have to beat some people. And they are still on their way to where they have a team that could just go out on the field and play football and beat people. And, you know, but some things happen this year. You got a running back, Tyler Allgeier. We'll go over some offensive stats here. He finished with 1,035 yards and 3 touchdowns. Cordarrelle Patterson had 8 touchdowns, ran for both of them, averaged over 4 carry, 4.9 and 4.8. So that was pretty good. Mariota averaged 5.2 when he was running. Caleb Huntley averaged over 4.8. So those are all your key backs, and they all are over 4 a carry. That was the one thing the Falcons did elite this year was running the football. Avery Williams was over 4 a carry at 5.0. So those are your main backs. And enough can't be said for Parker Hesse and Keith Smith, who kind of played a tight end, fullback, H-back thing. Did a lot of blocking for these backs. So the line and the H-back, fullback, tight ends did a good job too. So got to give your tip your hat to the run game for the Falcons. Now, Drake London finished as the top receiver, 72 catches for 866 yards, 4 touchdowns. Olamide Zaccheaus was second with 40 for 533 and 3 touchdowns. We got Mecole Pruitt with 4 touchdowns. He came on strong down the stretch with Kyle Pitts out, and Kyle Pitts had 2 touchdowns. So those are your receivers and runners. The overall offensive stats, the Falcons finished 24th in total offense, 318 yards, 318.6. They were third in rushing, averaging 159.9 a game. That's something you could build on moving forward, so that's good. Now they got to build out their passing game, which we saw Desmond Ridder go down the field in the Tampa Bay game repeatedly and with some success. Had a 40-yarder to Drake London, missed him a couple times. Drake got mauled on one that he should have caught, but the guy tackled him. No flag, but, you know, that'll be something to look at moving forward. And then they were also in the top half of the league in points scored at 21.5 a game. So you could build on that. Time of possession, 29 minutes and 48 seconds. So that was pretty good also. Another offensive stat. Third downs, they were 41 to 84, which was 10th in the league. So that's good. That should, you shouldn't regress there. You should get better on that with a better passing attack. Buffalo is number one at 50.26, so you're not that far from the top. Now, defensively, you know, the rankings weren't that good, but let's look at some individual stats first. The leading tacklers were Rashawn Evans at 159, Richie Grant at 122, Michael Walker at 107, Jalen Hawkins at 82, Troy Anderson 61, Grady Jarrett, 61, from tackle. That's a lot of tackles for your tackle there. And he also had 6 sacks, 12 tackles for loss, 17 quarterback hits. So the team finished with 21 sacks and 10 interceptions. And one of the free agents, in addition to Evans, Lorenzo Carter, let's just look at his stats. He had 58 tackles, 4 sacks, 1 interception, 6 tackles for loss, 12 quarterback hits, and 1 fumble recovery. And he had the touchdowns there too off of the block punt and the Rams game, and then he had another touchdown there. But I think one of the reasons they'll bring him back is he played in all 17 games, and his missed tackle rate with the Giants last year was 13.8%. And he got that all the way down to 1.7%. So he's assignment sure. Yeah, you like some more explosion numbers in the sack and hit game. But he's where he's supposed to be, and he's making tackles. He wasn't missing tackles. So, you know, that should bode well for Andrew. He's represented by Joel Siegel, Michael Vick's old agent. So I'm sure he'll keep us in the loop on Lorenzo Carter's situation. I got a few more defensive things. You know, Dean Pease vowed to change the culture. Let's give their numbers. You know, the defense didn't finish in the top half of the league in anything. Total yards, 362.1, which was 27th. Rushing yards, 130.2, which was 23rd. Passing yards allowed, 231.9, which was 25th. And then points, 22.7, which was 23rd. Everything was in the lower half of the league, but when Coach P spoke to us, he pointed out that the defense had gotten better in his mind. In the last 9 games, he thought they really started to put their foot down a little bit better, and he said they averaged 3 115 yards a game and 19.7 points a game over those last nine, which would be fifth in the league right now. But, you know, he said, unfortunately, that's not how we get to do it. The first eight games had to count, too. Then he noted that they went from 28th in the league in red zone defense to 14th. And we heard a lot of talk about the four-point swing of stopping a touchdown and making them go for field goals. So those are your defensive numbers. And we're going to go to the draft order and then take a break here. That's what we have down. The Chicago Bears will go 1, Houston 2, Arizona 3, Indianapolis 4. And this is where we, if the Falcons would have lost the two games they didn't need to win, they would have been slotted right here at the fifth pick. That's where Denver is. So they would have been in the top five. But, you know, what's the difference between 5 and 8? Should be a good player there, but there might be a drop-off right around 5 or 6. So we'll see how it goes. And that's Denver, which is traded to Seattle. So Seattle will get that pick. And then 6 was the Rams, which is traded to Detroit. So Detroit will get to add there. And what you look at for the Falcons, and then the Raiders, and then the Falcons. So what you look at for the Falcons is, hey, who's going to take quarterbacks? And I think they're going 1, 2, and or maybe not 1. They like Justin Fields up there. They'll stay with him. But definitely 2, 3, they just gave Murray all that money. The Colts have to go quarterback too, maybe. So, you know, maybe C.J. Stroud's going there and Bryce Young to Houston. And then Will Levis might go to Denver at 5. So the quarterbacks, if the Falcons wanted to get in the quarterback pool, they got to get up into the top 5. If they're fine with Desmond Ridder moving forward, then they just sit at 8. And so we'll see how that unfolds in the offseason. Now right behind the Falcons is the rest of the NFC South. The Panthers are 9th, Saints are 10th. And then just let's just go through the top 16 and, you know, we'll have the whole 32 later. But that's all we need to do for now, just pay attention to the top 16 if they want to go back or go up. So after the Saints, you got the Titans, then the Cleveland Browns pick at 12, which is traded to Houston, Deshaun Watson trade. The Jets, 13th, Patriots, 14th, Packers, 15th, and the 16th pick, the Washington Commanders. So that's your draft order here for the Falcons. They, you know, only losing the winning the two meaningless games dropped them from a 4 or 5, which ended up being a 5. To the 8th pick. So it didn't like drop them all the way to 14 or 15, which, you know, some of the Tankathon fans were upset about. So with that, we're going to take a break. This is the Bowtie Chronicles from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, we're back here at the Bowtie Chronicles podcast, episode 383. A look back on the 2022 season. We're going to hear from safety Eric Harris on if he knew Dean Pease was going to retire.
You know, Dean, he has a poker face, so nobody really kind of knew what was going to happen. But it all makes sense, you know. If you watch him and his career and everything, just how well he's done and everything, and obviously, you know, he came back out of retirement and everything to help Art and get a culture set here, and I think he's done a really good job with that.
Now, Harris was one of the veterans brought in to help the young players be professional. You know, he spoke to the team after the DeMar Hamlin situation, you know, pulled out his Bible and went for it in the team meeting. Well respected. Still played a lot on special teams for him. So, you know, you like your older guys. You know, if you're going to be a leader, you got to play some. And they, I don't know if they're going to keep him around another year or not. But good guy, and he wanted to, we checked in with him on the culture that's being built here in Atlanta.
I think the culture has kind of been set, you know, as far as what they expect and everything like that. The record doesn't reflect that as far as how close of a locker room we are and everything. But I think moving forward, this really special group.
Well, Lorenzo Carter was a popular Falcon the last week as all the TV stations wanted to talk to him about his Georgia Bulldogs. You know, we didn't have to do that. We just wanted to check in with Lorenzo, see about Dean Pease and if he wants to stay here. Here's what Lorenzo had to say.
Thoughts on the retirement of Dean Pease and stuff?
Yeah, it's been an honor just to have a chance to work with a coach like that with a legendary resume and just an even better personality. He taught us a lot. Just from mindset, like when it's time to go, we gotta go. And I mean, I appreciated everything he's done for us all year.
And then Bob coming back next year, would you want to come back, or you just gonna let the business take care of itself?
Yeah, I mean, this is home, so of course, you know, red and black all day. But I mean, we're gonna let that shake itself out. Hopefully, we get some news and can stay home. But it's just exciting just to be able to make it through the year. And I'm enjoying this time spending with my guys for the last couple hours.
Yeah. And do you think the defense, the foundation was laid for, you know, a lot of the players can, you know, you had a lot of young people over there.
Yeah.
Can, you know, improve and the units can get better?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we set the tone. We let people know that we aren't a pushover defense, and we weren't just going to fold and let people do what they wanted to do. So, I mean, I feel like we set a good foundation, and we showed the young guys how to play the game the right way and work hard.
Well, Young Waku is clutch again this year. He's also the ping pong champ in the locker room, but he wasn't playing today, so we were able to get with Ku on and check with him from the special teams perspective on how they did this season. Here's Young Waku, the Falcons kicker.
How you felt the season win, and what's it like? You know, as y'all seem to be building for the future here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it always can be better. It always can be worse. I'm just going to keep working and try to get better.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the takeaways for you all, the specialists this year? Got Bradley and Lim as new people in and into the operation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new group, but the process doesn't change. No matter who's in there, it's new people or same people, you know, we just go back to work and try to improve every time.
Mm-hmm. And any thoughts on getting your, I think it was the fifth game winner, a couple games back this season, and showing the consistency that they wanted to get at that position?
Yeah, just try to do my job and, you know, for the team and help the team. So just going back to working and you know, whether I make the kicks or miss the kicks, just go back to work.
And just one last thing. Coach was saying the 7-10 team last year, this one seems different. It looked like, you know, what's your sense of, 7-10 and moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're building something special here. And then we're a young team. And I think we have a bright future. So I'm excited for that.
Last person we're going to hear from the Atlanta Falcons today is left tackle Jake Matthews. We wanted to, the Falcons ran the ball this year. They got to put the passing game in. They got the weapons. They've been getting them in the draft. You know, London, Pitts, you know, they got to get another receiver and bring him along and then keep, you know, decide if they're going to keep Olamide Zaccheaus. But, they got to, this offseason, can't let the running game slip, but then you got to build out the passing game. You got to get more than 158, 59 yards a game.
We didn't end up where we wanted to be, obviously, not making the playoffs and whatnot. But we set goals for ourselves this year, and I think we kind of proved that, you know, we have the ability to run the ball, and we're kind of building something here that, you know, is going to be a winning culture. So, there's a lot to be, to look back on and feel good about as an offensive line. So we'll keep building on that, and I think we got bright future.
And just the rookies, you know, the influx of Drake, London, Algier, and Ritter, they all played and was all on the field at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Does that bode well for the unit in the future?
No, I think those guys are all key pieces to our offense, and they all showed, you know, they can play in this league and be really effective too. So, got nothing but respect for those guys and the way they came to work, especially being rookies. You know, it's a long season, it can be a grind, but they showed up and worked just as hard as everyone else and contributed and did a good job for our offense. So we're looking forward to expecting a lot from them in the future, you know.
The potential unrestricted free agents for the Falcons are Lorenzo Carter, Caleb McGarry, Olamide Zaccheaus, Isaiah Oliver, Rashad Evans, and we talked to all those guys, and everybody wants to come back. But, you know, if you get a big deal on the open market, maybe you don't come back. Punter Bradley Pinion, fullback Keith Smith wants to come back. Eric Harris wants to come back. Damir Bird, Jermaine Nfeti, Mike Ford, Anthony Fersker, Elijah Wilkinson, Vincent Taylor, Bo Brinkley, the long snapper who missed all year. Cordarrelle Hodge, he wants to come back. It won't cost him a lot to get these guys back, the ones they want to keep. Nick Kawatowski, McCole Pruitt, Jalen Johnson, late add at tackle. He was playing pretty good in there. Kobe Gassett, valuable, third string left guard this year. Well, started out at second string, but it ended up at third. Matt Dickerson, veteran, you know, low defensive end. Cost much there. Chuma Adoga, the tackle, played at guard here. Abdullah Anderson played a lot along the defensive line. Liam McCullum. Liam is the long snapper. Rashawn Fenton is the cornerback they signed, traded for from Kansas City. Tried to see if he can come in and help him out. He ended up being inactive for most of the year. Now, free agent-wise, Spot Rack has some market value numbers for what it's going to cost a couple of the free agents. And this is not big, so it's not going to kill all of the money and keep them from going after free agents. McGarry's projection by them is a four-year market value projection. It's 4 years, $70.9 million. Olamide Zaccheaus is 2 years, $7.5 million. And Rashawn Evans is 2 years, $4.5 average. $9 million. So that'll be a good bump for him. He doubled his salary pretty much because he played for 1.75 this year. Now the only wild card is if they go to the open market and get a substantially better deal. But yeah, these are the comps. They use comps for each player and each player's production, and that's how they come up with the market value for the players. All right, so let's go to the offseason calendar in. Then we'll get you ready for the playoff weekend. Okay, our first date, off-season date, is January the 16th. That's the last day for a special eligibility deadline. The deadline for college players who are underclassmen to apply for special eligibility to the draft. A list of the underclassmen who have been approved for entry into the 2023 NFL draft will be sent to clubs on January the 20th. Okay, that's the first date. Next date is February 4th, Senior Bowl. And all the, you know, reporting the week before that will be down in Mobile for the two practices. And we'll usually come on back and watch the game here. After that, then you got this Super Bowl. The next business date here is February the 21st. That's the beginning at 4 p.m. That's when clubs can designate franchise or transition players. I don't think they have anybody for either of those this year. And that's the one. That's the date for if Baltimore hasn't done anything with Lamar Jackson, they can go and throw the franchise tag on him. That's going to hurt their cap long term, though, until they get a deal. And then the combine is set for February the 28th through March the 6th at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. And then on March the 7th, you have your the deadline for clubs to designate the franchise and transition players. On March the 13th through the 15th is your legal tampering period. And that's when the teams kind of set the parameters with the agents on what the deals are going to look like. And that's really done a week before at the combine. And then they just formalize it. It keeps some of the executives out of the way of the agents at the combine. They can focus on looking at the players. But it used to always happen at the combine. But now they got the whole legal tampering period where they could put the numbers to paper and at least have the negotiations. It says clubs are permitted to contact and enter into contract negotiations with the certified agents of players who will become unrestricted free agents. So that's our first sign of where we'll start hearing names about who the Falcons are after. Thinking they're going to be going defensive linemen. We'll see who the biggest, baddest defensive linemen are out there and make sure we contact their agents to see if we are correct in the assessment here. So during the above two-day negotiating periods, UFAs, unrestricted free agents, who is not represented by a NFL-certified contract advisor, is permitted to communicate directly with a new club's front office officials, excluding the head coach. Okay, then the official league year starts on March the 15th. That's when the Falcons get all their cap money back. They get out of salary cap jail on March the 15th. Okay, the annual league meeting. And then the league, first day of the league year is March the 15th at 11:59:59, New York time. On March 15th, clubs will receive a personal notice that will include all transactions submitted to the league office during the period between 4 p.m. New York time and 11. March the 26th, the annual league meeting will be in Phoenix. And then we're on to April, and clubs that have hired a new coach, they can begin their offseason workouts on April the 3rd. And then the Falcons' date will be April the 17th. That's when clubs with returning head coaches may begin off-season workout programs. All right. And then the next big thing, April is the end of the month. I'm going to skip these deadlines. Right of first refusal, the testing for drafted people, and so forth. But the draft is at the end of April. Draft is April the 27th through the 29th in Kansas City. Yeah, draft is in Kansas City. So that gets us, the first leg of the offseason underway. That'll after that, then you start getting into OTAs in May and rookie minicamp, then minicamp, and then break, and then back. Then we're back here in July for training camp. So, but that's the business part of the season, the offseason. That's what the Falcons is going to be a busy offseason. So that's why I wanted y'all to get the calendar together. You shouldn't be worrying about the draft right now. You should be worrying about free agency. Who are they going to keep? Who are they going to sign? That's going to tip off your hand on which way they got to go in the draft. So pretty sure they're going to sign a veteran quarterback. Mark Bradley wrote about that in the AJC this morning or yesterday. And so and then we're looking at Tannehill out of Tennessee, what's going to happen there. But it's going to be a very busy offseason for the Falcons, and we're looking forward to covering it for you all. So with that, one more thing. We got to do the playoffs. Get y'all ready for Super Wild Card Weekend. All right, the playoffs, Super Wild Card Weekend schedule. And I like the Monday night game. We get an extra Monday night with this new setup that they went to in 2020 with seven teams. So Seattle at San Francisco at 4:30. So get your chores done. I know I got some. I'm going to try to trim some bushes on Saturday. But by 4:30, I'm going to be ready for Seattle at San Francisco. Then you got the AFC game that night. Want to see that? I didn't know my man Corey Peters was with Jacksonville, so good luck to him. But the Chargers are at Jacksonville at 8:15 on NBC. And then on Sunday, we Miami and Buffalo at 1 o'clock. Then the Giants and at Minnesota at 4:30. And then the night game, Baltimore at Cincinnati. So that's the old AFC matchup, AFC North. And then the Monday game is Dallas at Tampa Bay at 8:15. The Monday close out Super Wild Card Weekend with that Monday night game against the Cowboys and Tampa Bay. And I was watching Stephen A and the guys today. They're already saying the coach is gone. If they stunk it up in Washington, they're going to lose to Brady. It's all Dak's fault. Coach Herman saying, hey, they got to run the ball. Don't let this guy try to throw with Brady. He can't do it. You got to get him out the pocket. So, hey, they're already beating that cowboy drum on the TV shows and so forth. So I'm just going to call these playoffs the Kansas City Invitational because that's what it looks like. Of course, the Bengals can get hot and get back again. And overcome the fact that they won't have a home game in the championship round if they would have won the number one seed. Buffalo's going to be a tough out. And the NFC looks like San Francisco's playing the best. So a San Francisco-Kansas City rematch would be in order. That's what we're going to call it right now. San Francisco and Kansas City, they played in Miami right before the pandemic hit. And Jimmy G missed wide open receivers, and that kind of started Kyle Shanahan's search for a new quarterback that's still ongoing. And Brock Purdy's at the controls right now, former Iowa State kid who's looking good on his rollouts and everything that you got to do in Kyle's offense. So, yep, I'm calling it right here. Kansas City and San Francisco will make it through the maze. Watch out for Buffalo and Cincy in the AFC. And in the NFC, I'm worried about the old guy, number 45. He can be a problem. He can beat Dallas, no question about it. Giants, be good to see them back. I don't trust Kirk Cousins, so I don't think they're legitimate title contenders. So, I think it's Brady and the 49ers in the NFC. And then in the AFC, you're looking at Kansas City, Buffalo, and Cincinnati. And we're just going to call it the Kansas City Invitational / Super Bowl playoffs. And the NFL can call it the NFL Super Bowl Wildcard Weekend. So with that, I know that was a lot for the first one after the end of the season, but we're going to hear from GM Terry Fontenot and Coach Arthur Smith tomorrow on Wednesday. Hopefully we kind of got the framework of how the offseason is going to go down. Hopefully, I'll fill in some blanks for us on that also. So with that, hey, we're going to get out of here, and we're going to let you get ready for Super Bowl Wildcard Weekend and get ready for our extra edition of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast this week. Be up on Friday. We'll be hearing from the general manager, Terry Fontenot, and head coach, Arthur Smith. So take care and have a great rest of your week.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.